All you mitt heads and twiglets, welcome back to another episode of the Mitts and Twigs podcast. And let me just throw this out there real quick. If you aren't firmly in either camp, you're welcome also. We welcome all those on the Mitts and Twigs spectrum. So thank you for joining us yet again. Here we are, second up in the new year. So far, so good. Obviously, I'm not talking about hockey, but Ty, how are you doing, pal?
Doing well, man. I had a beautiful break going back to work here on Monday. Beautiful long break. Enjoyed a lot of hockey. Enjoyed some time with the family. You know, I did have to, I will preference this too. I did have to, you know, convince my wife that my Horvat Miller analogy last week was just all fake. Like, it wasn't real. She had some questions for me. I only been with one girl since high school. So, yeah, it was a complete analogy. Just trying to be a better storyteller. That's all.
Yeah. No, that's your creativity can get you into trouble at times.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you for it. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know what? We were going to start with temp check, but it just kind of dawned on me that we should really discuss first and foremost the hockey elephant in the room that is Connor Bedard. He might be that good. Unlike a lot of the first round hyped players in the last 5 to 10 years, this guy looks like he may actually be that good. Had a hell of a showing at the World Juniors recently, where, you know, he proved it. He proved up against some of the best in the world at that age. And so, you know, this is it. This is like this could be the next great player. What do you think, Ty? Are you all in? Do you still have any doubts?
How can you not be all in? He's incredible. He's a tiny, shifty player. Is he going to be McDavid? Is he going to do all that? I don't know. You don't know what he is, but I'm enjoying for like right now what he is at this level. It's amazing to watch. I don't think there's ever been a player 17 years old do what he did. Like, just completely. I think it was like 60-something% of his, like, of Canada's points were from Bedard, which is incredible. I don't know. I'm sitting here and you see the tweets. What would you give up for Connor? Everything. I'd give everything up for Connor Bedard. I would go full tank mode right now if there was like, again, and I don't know why Vancouver's not sitting there. This kid has like said it on the record like multiple times now, how big of a Canucks fan he is. Tank it. Fold. Just do whatever, you know what I mean? Because you're going to sell a shit ton more tickets with Connor Bedard than JT Miller. Just saying, just it's what you're going to do. But no, he was incredible. It took me a little bit to get back into the World Juniors again. I'm still like, I just have not been, you know, IHF and Team Canada. It just haven't been all into it. But Connor Bedard brings the eyeballs to the TV. And boy, were fans just Jack to hear his post game conference, where it was like, it's not about me, it's about the team. Boy, were they over the moon. That's captain material. That's the guy you want to lead your franchise. I'm like, it's clearly media trained, but like, it was an awesome response. Like, it was about as media trained. It's like Matthew Tkachuk when he talks in the media. Paul Maurice is the best coach he's ever had. Really? Look at your record and look at your deployment. It's not true. These players are media trained like really well nowadays. And Connor Bedard's answer was about as perfectly delivered as the probably coaching media coach wanted him to say it. So yeah, good on him. Great tournament there. And even that Stankoven kid, how did he fall last year? There is so many good players on Team Canada. There's so many good players, like even the Czech team. Hey, Jiříček, the Columbus prospect. Whew, he's going to be good. So it's a fun gold medal game. I don't know if I love the 3-on-3 overtime in the World Juniors. Like, it should be 5-on-5. That's my only negative thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I do think Bedard is going to be that good. Like, he looks like it. He's got that. He's kind of that cloth. But yeah, where I do feel people still need to temper their expectations is, you know, you can be a generational talent, but still not be the next Sidney Crosby, the next Connor McDavid, the next Alexander Ovechkin. You know, I'll take this one moment to not throw shade his way. You know, he could be, you know, one of the best snipers of all time, but still not be as impactful as that real leadership role can be. And I think that this guy is almost certainly, you know, barring injury, barring any health obstacles, whatnot, should have a long and very successful hockey career. But I think I would always, I would always hesitate to put a guy up there as like the team savior, because the team, you know, to quote him, it takes more than one player. It's about the team. And that's it as well. Is it like, that's such an easy, like, that's not an insightful or a really reflective moment. Like, it just, like, come on. Anybody with any kind of sense or it's so easy for him to say that.
Yeah, it was
like,
it's
not a complex moment. It's not a, if he had said anything but that, it would have been a bit of an interesting red flag, but still, it's a very highly emotional moment for a kid. Like, that's why I couldn't help but laugh, because I didn't see the moment live. I saw all the headlines about how impressive his answer was and how and everybody was over the moon. And then I watched it and I immediately went, what? Like, this is, oh, it's about to the team first, not me. It's about giving 110% out there and just sticking to the system and playing our game. Like, come on, this is hockey talk. This guy knows this inside and out. He can do it in his sleep. It probably would have been the same answer if they won the game or they lost the game or they scored 50 goals or, you know, they got it. So, yeah.
I still like his last year or 5 months ago answer where he like started swearing. This is effing awesome. I prefer that one way more, like the raw moment. Like, I'll take that every day of the week over this past reply. I just want to say this too. And this is where I feel like the Olympic Committee and the NHL have failed. Is there, and even I think there's no better hockey than World Juniors hockey. Like, when it's played and you take away all the negative stuff and you just take about hockey, it could be a 2-0 lead and these kids, like, they start to freak out a bit. They're like, oh my gosh, we're up 2-0. And it's just like momentum shifts this whole game. Like, every single game is just, it's a different game every 10 minutes, which is incredible to watch. I will go to my deathbed saying that World Juniors hockey, when it's run properly and not shady stuff happening, there's not better hockey. It is just, it's incredible. Like, it's fast. There's mistakes. There's momentum shifts. Where even like you have to go back a ways back, the past Olympics that we had, Canada just ran the table, right? Like, they're a mature group. They know how to play with the lead. They know all that stuff. And heck, the world, you meet all these people for the first times. You're 16 or 17, 18. You get thrown in this complex, like, tournament where you really don't know who's good. You don't know who's bad. And I don't know. I love watching it. It took me a little bit to get back into it because of all the negative headlines and even the post-game things that the director said. I just freaking, there's a lot of like weird things with the World Juniors right now.
Yeah,
but hockey's good.
Hockey Canada seems like, it's been a long time. It feels like a long time. It's probably been like 2 weeks since they've been out of the headlines. So that feels like we're not going to go into that too much, but it feels like that's moving in the right direction at the very least, we could say. And to piggyback on your point, and at the risk of being too agreeable, I just go a step further and say junior hockey, major junior hockey, is dollar for dollar more enjoyable and entertaining than NHL game. I mean, first of all, let's just throw out the fact that NHL games are largely well overpriced for the most part, in my opinion. Throwing out there, won't elaborate. But you go to the junior hockey, you're going to see there's a lot more drama baked into it. Like you said, team can go up two, can go down, up four, like down four. Like, it's all over the place. The players are playing, like, they're obviously less composed. They've seen it less, but they've got players out there that probably know that they're not going to make a career of this. And so this is their biggest hockey moment. So they're giving everything that they have. And I think that raw emotion of it, which is really what I think a lot of us tapping into sports are trying to feel, is that emotion, whether that's that high or that low. And so, I think junior hockey for the most part is higher, more enjoyable product. And from the nature of it, your team doesn't go through these like 5 to 10 year lulls of being garbage. You know, it's like a 3 to 4 year cycle loss of the time. Or if you're the London Knights, you just buy the best team every year. And so call it a day. But you know, I think they're getting Shane Wright, if I'm not mistaken. The NHL professional hockey player is going to go play for London Knights. That makes sense.
I'm pretty sure. So I will say this, though. Usually it's the OHL that just takes over that tournament. There's a lot of players from the dub. Like a lot of, like Zellweger, there was Bedard, there was Dinkoven, there was a bunch of Doc. Who else was there? Was like Team Canada was full dub players, and that's awesome. Like Western Conference hockey is fun to watch. It's good for this region, the BC, the Alberta, Saskatchewan. It's great. It's nice to see the OHL not just running away with it all the time. I will say this too. I honestly don't know how Shane Wright isn't playing in the NHL right now. Like, I get that they're going to let him develop, but man, he is good. Like, he's that goal he scored in the gold medal game. That is a crazy backhander that an NHL player makes, not a W, like a world. I mean, a junior player makes. So it was a good tournament for him. He probably needed it, to be honest.
Yeah. He's probably had a difficult, season. For lack of a better term there. So yeah, good for him. Good for all the teams. Good for the players. I throw in this last little bit. I may live in the West now, but I'm Q League till I die. Q of Jelly Joe.
Ah, you guys know what I'm
talking about. Go Mooseheads. Go Mooseheads. not a big deal. Just the best franchise in all of Major Junior. Second London Knights. Anyways, moving on. The World Juniors are what they are. We had a little bit of fun with that. That's great. Temp check time.
Boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Are the Flames
burning?
Burning. Ooh.
That was loud, but they were burning. They are, let me just read their last 20 games here, which is quite nice here. So their last 20 games, 10 wins, 14 overtime losses, 5-1 goal losses, including an empty net goal, tied in third period. Oh, that doesn't make any sense. And then one other. Do you know what the other game is? So they've had one bad game. This kills me. One bad game against the St. Louis Blues, where it's 5-2. But other than that, they're in 19 of the last 20 games, and majority of them are one goal. They are, I think, their top 10 for creating 5-on-5 chances right now. Darryl's system seems to be working, even though I don't know how Milan Lucic is still in the top six. I'm going to bang my drum. Again, I've been crapping on him. I love Milan Lucic on the team. Love Milan Lucic on the Calgary Flames. Last year, fourth line player, potted 10 goals. He was great. His role was awesome. He knew what he was doing. I don't love top six Milan Lucic. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'm just like, let's have Pelche go in there. Let's have Matthew Phillips go in there. Somebody that's got more than that has the ability to score more than 9 goals this season. He's got Milan Lucic has got 3 right now, and I just can't see it going up. But back on to what I'm saying, they're top 10 in creating five on five chances, but they are bottom seven in finishing. So, get a nice little finisher in there, and things are going to start going even better for the Calgary Flames. So temp check is high. They're playing a really good system right now. Defense is, doing well. Goal scoring still not coming, but they're creating chances. Nazem Kadri just got selected to the All-Star game, which is – I've loved what Naz did, but I can't believe Lindholm didn't get in. But, yeah.
Did he get selected or appointed?
Yeah, I don't
– I think that that's what's kind of, I don't know.
The All-Star thing is weird to me this year. Like, even Tarasenko made it. I'm like, has he played majority of the season for the Blues? Like, I don't even think he's been their best player. So Nazem Kadri made it. It's like, okay, well, there's two better players. I think Rasmus Anderson's had a better year, and I think Elias Lindholm's had a better year. But fans, vote him in. Let's like make sure Draisaitl doesn't get in. That would be sweet. Vote anybody but Draisaitl.
I don't see how that could possibly happen. Hey, I mean, really, Lucic's main job right now is to hold Huberto's hand until he gets comfortable playing in that raucous area. You know, it's probably been a long time since he's heard loud fans on a regular basis. It's probably a little bit jarring for the young man.
You know what I will say about Huberto? And I was amped to get Huberto. 85 assists last year, most by the like any left winger in NHL history. That guy will have a wide open net. Like, it will be gaping. Like, it will be, there's no goalie. It's just shoot the puck in and you'll get a goal. He will look that off and pass it three times before he even decides to shoot. It's unbelievable. Like, if we want to talk a player that is probably the least selfish in the NHL, it's Jonathan Huberdeau. The man's got the talent. Just shoot it, my guy. Just shoot the puck. Your stats will go up, because if you keep firing cross-seam passes to Milan Lucic, it's not going to work. You're just going to, like, be, you know, pointless for majority of the season.
Maybe you guys could like project an illusion of a player in the net.
That would be, so just a little slider. Passing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So he's like, oh, I'll pass to that guy. He's wide open.
Yeah.
Boom, it's in the net. I don't know how many times it would work before he would figure it out, but at least to get a couple goals in there.
Holy cow. It's like, I think I yell at my TV and this is like the fan in me. Just shoot, right? Like three times. We're at the game. I was at the game, Sweet Life, the other night. No, humble break. Just chilling in a suite, eating some food, drinking some pops. Luxury is all I will say. Luxury.
Yeah. Yeah. And the pod life is all about, baby.
Yeah. Buy into our shares. We're going public. Yeah, I think I yelled shoot three times, but he didn't hear me because I was so high up because I was living that luxury suite life, but whatever. Yeah. Next time.
Should have used the luxury suite phone just to call down to the bench that, you know, all of us luxury suite users have that direct line to the coaching staff to offer that.
Well, general manager Brad Treliving came down and said, hey, maybe tonight we just don't use the phone. And I was like, okay, no problem.
Ah, BT. Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair
no
enough.
Problem, BT.
Yeah.
So temp check's good. How about you? How are what is it, 2019
Stanley Cup champions? Yeah, I'm glad you remembered it. So it's about time. Well, the 2019 Stanley Cup champions are doing great. Still riding high.
Yeah.
The 2022-23 Blues are... Let me. Obviously, I went off a little bit on the last step. And since then, things haven't changed that much. However, we did just drop that hilarious game to Montreal, help them break their 7-game losing streak. But in the last 28 games, right? So 28 games ago, the Blues broke an 8-game losing streak. Started the year off with 3, lost 28. Last 28 games, the Blues are 16-9-3. Which is third most in wins in the league, fifth most in points. In that time, 99 goals scored, which is number one in the league, including 67 of those 5-on-5, also number one in the NHL. To go with that, they've allowed 99 goals in that span, which is the third most. Including 62 5-on-5 goals, which is the fifth most. Now, I've watched their power play. I'm not surprised they don't score. They're terrible on the power play. They look like 5 Jonathan Huberdeaus out there just passing it back and forth, except none of them are expecting to get the puck at any time, no matter what the situation. It would be sad if it wasn't so consistently hilarious. But here's the thing. If the Blues had any measure of defense, they'd fire their way up the standings. They're scoring. They're still scoring quite a bit. They still are somehow having some success. Binnington's not playing all that well, but the defense is garbage. I think we're down 2 or 3 starters at this point now back there. Letty, if I'm not mistaken, is out. Krug's out for a little bit. It's brutal. It's really brutal. And keep in mind, the last couple of games, the Blues have scored, I think, almost four goals a game since Ryan O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko have been out.
Mm-hmm.
So arguably 2 of their top 6 players aren't playing and they're still scoring. They're still out there. It's such a weird time. It paints such an odd picture that, I don't know. It's still kind of hope. I still feel very, very much feel like probably the best thing to do is trade Ryan O'Reilly to get something for him this season. And unless Vlad has had a change of heart, which, you know, he's a professional. He hasn't talked about the trade interests in quite some time. But unless he's had a change of heart, probably the best thing is to trade him as well. Get whatever we can for those guys at the trade deadline. Maybe even try to turn it into something substantial. When I was feeling a little bit more loopy the other night, I imagined some three-way deal that sends Vlad and Ryan somewhere with some picks that involves another team and somehow Jacob Chychrun coming to the Blues. I don't think I crunched the numbers cleanly, and I don't know what that other third team is going to be yet. But when I do, Dougie is going to get a phone call from me. Yeah, I don't know. I think the Blues are in a position now still that despite the numbers saying that the offense is rolling and the team's scoring, they're just bereft of any defensive talent on the back end. Mind you, their defense can score, but primarily we really like them to stop the other team from scoring so much.
Yeah, it's incredible where the Blues are right now. And they have, I think it's the 30th penalty kill. And I think the bottom third, maybe even bottom quarter, goals against, which is impressive because their power play, I know you said it was terrible, but they still are sitting 12th, which is not bad. And their goals against, I think, is 19th. And they've come off of two really big wins. They beat Toronto, which is awesome. They beat New Jersey, which is really even more impressive. No shot at Toronto there. And then they somehow lost to Montreal, which I'll give Montreal credit. You don't know what you're getting out of them, but some games they just turn it on. They beat the Flames this year. They've now beat the Blues. They've beat some really good. They beat, if I can pull it up here, it doesn't really matter, but they're not as an easy out as you think they are. So, but I do want to say this too, just to piggyback off what you were saying, man, the trade deadline is going to be fascinating this year. I think I was reading today, Sam Reinhart's available. You got Duclair available. You have Vladimir Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, Timo Meier, Jacob Chychrun. There's a lot of big names that.
Taze and Kane
could Taze, be up there. Yeah, where's Kane going? Because he's not even playing right now. So it must be, you know, hey, I know we're not going to win here. Let's get me somewhere nice. Still can't see it being anywhere else but New York. Just fits. Or Buffalo. Yeah. Could you imagine Buffalo with Patrick Kane? But I wouldn't want to touch that chemistry too because it's so early in a rebuild. And do you really want to fast forward it when you really like what you have? And I think they're 2 or 4 points out of a wild card spot right now. Nah, let them roll.
Yeah, I think Buffalo would be wise to stand pat and not do anything other than maybe if they've got some really depth things or some, let's say some prospects that they've identified are not going to be it, if they want to move them out to make room and that small, small move shuffling, but overall, the team chemistry is looking great, then they really shouldn't rush it. They should just kind of let whatever happens this year happens and build off of that, be for the best.
Right.
I want to, this is probably a little bit out of character.
Uh-oh.
Because we all know that I don't have a lot of nice things to say about Alexander Ovechkin. And then by proxy, the Washington Capitals. I do spend a lot of time bagging on the Caps. But how dangerous do they look right now, getting Backstrom back healthy now, getting Tom Wilson back healthy now? Carlson's probably done for the year, essentially. But they're already sitting tops of the wild card, and they just got back two very good key players for them. You know, I just looked at that and I realized, geez, these guys might not even be playing their best hockey right now. They're getting back some real talented players. They're already right there. I don't know. I guess I just want to kind of tip my cap to the fact that much like Boston, they're doing the best of making what time they have left count. I think they're going to go on a big run. I could definitely see them pushing their way into the top three in the division. If they, there's no reason to think that.
I can't remember. Didn't they have a terrible start? Didn't they start off not too hot? They fell and everybody's like, oh, there's no way they're coming back. Sonny Milano has been a great pickup for them. The Flames somehow had a top six winger, and they just, you know, were like, nah, we're good. Go find somewhere else to play. He's been amazing for them. Alex Ovechkin's been really good. Dylan Strom has been awesome. Charlie Lindgren has been carrying them. I know Matt is a huge fan of the Lynn. You know, good old boy Charlie. Darcy Kemper's been good. That team is coached well. It's a really mature group, and they're getting healthy, which is scary. Because at the start of the year, with all those injuries, you're probably like, yeah, this is not going to be a good team. And they got some battles. They have an older, you know, older roster. TJ Oshie's in and out, in and out. No, good on the Washington Capitals. I think it's good that the Capitals are still ultra competitive, because I think everybody right now is watching the grade eight. Hey, when are you going to break that record? How many more goals are you going to score? Even Wayne Gretzky said it's not if anymore, it's when. So I'm excited. Like I want to see Ovechkin, you know, maybe have another party sit summer. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody party harder after winning a cup than Alex Ovechkin and TJ Oshie. They were incredible to watch. But yeah, good on them and sticking to it, and good free agent signings. A lot of people raised eyebrows when they waived Ilya Samsonov, who seems to have found a home in Toronto, and replaced him with an overpriced Darcy Kemper, right? He won a cup, but believe it or not, it wasn't because of Darcy Kemper. They went and they stole Charlie Lindgren. They stole him. Like, imagine the Blues being a different team this year with that backup instead of, you know, everybody's favorite, Thomas Greiss.
Yeah.
But I'm
super saver back there.
Oh man, he is just not good. But he beat the Flames.
Binnington played his 31st game yesterday, which at the time led the league. So that just gives you an idea. Out of 40, I think 40 games, so that gives you an idea of how helpful Greiss has been. That bodes well. Yeah. I not to hijack things, but I gotta say as well, on the other side of things, and I mean they've been facing injuries, they're still getting some players back. Colorado Avalanche need to do something about their goaltending depth. Like, I still think that Georgiev can be a solid enough number one, and not just this year, but especially in years in the future. But he's another guy that's just getting played nonstop, getting not a lot of help in front of him. I watched him, you know, hashtag sweet life, playing in Vancouver here last week. And man, like, the three goals, I mean, Cousy's first goal was just absolutely gorgeous. And then Vancouver just poured on the pressure. And I don't believe I've ever seen in the last 5 or 6 years, I should say, I've seen the last 5 or 6 years, this Avs team look so lost and defeated as that, like, 5 to 10 minute period or portion of the second period where the Canucks scored three goals, one of which being the eventual game winner. Goals two and three, though, Georgiev was clearly pissed. He lost it up for the third goal and was just trying to hack the net down with his stick, because they were just all over him, all over the puck, all over everything, and Colorado just didn't have an answer. Guy needs a break. Francois is still hurt. They have no real backup. They need to bring in. I don't think they need to bring in a number one, but I mean, a 1B would be great, or at the very least, somebody that can give you a chance. I don't even, off the top of my head, I don't even know who's out there that they should go after or that they could afford. But man, if they want to have any kind of a hope of coming into the playoffs and making a run, they need to get some help back there to their goaltender.
Yeah, that's a team, though. I just want to pull up their lines really quick. That's a team that is just not deep anymore. And that's what happens when everybody gets paid. Imagine the Colorado Avalanche still with Nazem Kadri. They would still be way better than what they are right now. I think they regret the Nichushkin signings. He came out of the gate. He was on fire. Clearly that ankle he hurt in the playoffs last year was still affecting him. Came back, had surgery, still affected him, and he's out some more, right? So they invested in him. They didn't choose the goaltending route. They didn't choose the center route. They chose two wingers, Lekkonen, and they chose Nichushkin. And rightfully so, Nathan MacKinnon decided, you know, hey, it's time for me to get the bag. They still don't have Landeskog. Their fourth line is this, like, it's just this big. It's not good. Their defense is still, like, it is Ben Myers, Martin Kaut, and Jacob McDonald. Even last night I was watching the Oilers game. Again, I can't believe it. They outplayed Edmonton, which is incredible, but it was on the backs of their big boys. It was Nathan MacKinnon. It was Makar. It was Mikko Rantanen. And that's, and Gorgiev, you know, made some big saves when he needed to. Let me ask you this. Do you think the Colorado Avalanche are a team that can repeat, or do you think they're a one first round, second round exit team this year? It's hard to bet against them.
Yeah, I mean, they're so talented, even though it may be kind of shallow, they're so talented that if they get in, I think that they've got a chance at winning a couple of, like a series at sea, let's say. I mean, right now, time of recording, they're sitting outside the playoffs behind Edmonton. But, I mean, I wouldn't count them out against, like, if we're looking at this like a Dallas or a Vegas, I wouldn't count them out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they need to get some goaltending help soon, because they, you can't have your goaltender play 70 games in a season and expect any kind of a run from him. It's just not, especially a guy who's never played more than like 25, 30 games in a season before in his career. He's going to be wiped out and exhausted. So they need help soon to relieve that so that he can get a rest and get in a better shape for that.
Right.
They need to add something. And obviously getting back all their healthy players, Manson, Landeskog,
Byram.
I mean, if Byram, I mean, that guy's so young and has missed so much time already that, I mean, I hope that if it's more so about taking time and thinking long term, making sure that he's fully healthy so he doesn't lose years, but
mm-hmm.
then the back end. But yeah, you know, Byram and then Francois can come back, but like they need more depth. So in my opinion, they need to add some goaltending help.
Yeah.
Probably a vet back there that can take every third or fourth game for a little while. They need to add probably some center depth, and preferably like a middle six center depth, not anything lower than that. So
you know who I think they should get, just so while you're on center depth, and I'm going to lock it in right now. I think it's a lock. I know they were talking Seattle and they were talking Columbus. I think the Colorado Avalanche will somehow end up with Bo Horvat.
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense.
It just makes so much sense. Move out a young defender.
Yeah.
You know, they got Byram from the area. They have Girard. They can make the cap work. And what they were so good last year because they had the 1-2 punch or 1-2-3 punch of Compher, Kadri, and MacKinnon. Just makes so much sense.
Yeah. I think there's three guys that I think, not looking at cap, that make sense. And one of them is Horvat. Because I think that Vancouver genuinely doesn't want to let him go, but I think that they realistically can't keep him. I think Bo makes sense. I could see Jonathan Toews, but I don't know that the money would make sense at all.
And
then Ryan O'Reilly. But I know, like, hockey-wise, it makes perfect sense because he would fit into that, you know, second or third line center role and would give them so much that they be perfect, you know. But going back there, I mean, I don't know how much, are there hard feelings? Is there anything left over relationship wise there? Or is it like going back to, you know, I don't know, going back to the place that you don't want to ever think about again. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
He's definitely the player that they would want. I think Bo Horvat, Taves, I just can't see it. I could see if Calgary's out, a player like Michael Backlund is the perfect shutdown kind of center that they could use. To be honest, I just think it's a lock that Colorado is going to end up with Bo Horvat. I think Vancouver loves Bo and Byram. I think there's been, you know, rumors about that return for other players. Again, his cap hit is not very high. And unless Seattle forks up a crazy amount of picks or prospects, yeah, I have Colorado getting them. And that's exactly what they need. Could you imagine a Landeskog, Horvat, and then MacKinnon, Rantanen, 1-2 punch? Woo! Rippy.
If you properly replace Nazem Kadri's role there, that overall depth chart looks very different.
Oh yeah,
a strong second line center. Because let's be fair, Compher has had a pretty solid season.
It's been a great season,
and he's been basically playing a lot of second line center and playing and but he's not that level. But you drop him back to like a mostly third line center, he's going to be getting like probably easier matchups, or I don't want to say easier matchups, but less challenging matchups, play less star power back there. And then similarly, you put Landeskog back on a wing, and then all of a sudden you've got two great lines instead of one home run line and a bunch of, you know,
well, haven't even plugged in Lekkonen or Nichushkin. Like those are one center. They're one like solid top six center away from being the exact same team.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to look at like what's Franco's. I think he might. Last time I remember reading about it, it sounds like it's going to be a while. So that's the thing is for my money that the longer they wait to add some goaltending depth, the more talent they're going to have to bring in because they're going to need some, like the more games that they're going to need him to play. So obviously there's still a lot that has to unfold in the next, like say 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously we're talking about some of the big superstars because we know that they're likely to be available or at least within reach. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of other players that, you know, we haven't talked about or we wouldn't even think about that are going to become available that could be either more affordable or make more sense in terms of a long-term solution. But yeah, it probably just determines, it probably depends on Colorado really taking a step back and looking at their core and saying, okay, should we be pushing really hard to get this now and next year? Or can we take this year as a sometimes shit happens year and just retool for next year, you know, not to throw in the towel this year, but instead of spending resources at a premium, wait till the off season when you can sign players and make kind of less desperate trades. Because let's be honest, that's what we saw last year is a great example. That's what the trade deadline trades are. They're desperate.
Oh,
trades.
Yeah. Usually the person that adds the biggest pieces don't win the Stanley Cup. Now, do I think that Colorado Avalanche are a bit different because they're, you know, just won a cup and they have those pieces? And I don't think they have the cap to add at the free agent deadline, which kind of like, you know, makes them bigger trade deadline players than, say, at the free agency or at the draft because their big boys are locked up. Lots of money, four of them. So I can see that where, I don't know. But I do want to shift a bit, and I have a couple questions to ask you. The first one is a little bit hot take-ish, maybe not. Maybe if we were asking this question 5 years ago, you would have been like, home run, easy. Is Erik Karlsson the best defenseman in the NHL? Let me just read you his stats. Let me read 41 games, and he plays on one of the worst teams in the league. 41 games, 13 goals, 41 assists. 54 points. He's going to shatter career highs across the board. He's projected to be a 100-point defenseman. And you're just flat out saying no.
No, he's not. The best way I can describe this is with a basketball comparison. So I do apologize to our listeners if I lose you here. But think about how many years DeMar DeRozan was the best player on the Raptors. And think about right now where he's probably the best player on Chicago Bulls. This is a guy that his scoring average is still going up year over year right now. So he is having some of his best basketball. He's not even close to top five, top 10 in the league.
Mm.
He can score at that level because he's the main focus and there's no real competition there. You see this oftentimes with teams that are less successful, let's say, where they have a superstar who gets all those minutes, who gets all those situations, who's always there. They're the go-to. I'm not saying his stats are padded. This is all due respect to what he's putting together, which is a fantastic season, arguably one of his best of his career. Is he the best defenseman in the NHL right now? No. No.
Okay, give me the four guys who're taking over him. Like right now, his play is incredible. He's a minus four. I get it. Minus four. That's not great. Again, that team can't stop a beach ball. Like, you probably don't know half the players on the San Jose Sharks. They are a bottom feeder. They are wanting to rebuild. They ate money to get rid of Brent Burns. They have two good forwards, really, in Hurdle and Meyer. Guess what? They want to get Meyer out of the hell out of town. It's hard to make an argument where Erik Karlsson isn't as dynamic as he was 4, 5, 6 years ago. You could easily make the argument he's going to win the Norris this year. Easily.
I mean, I guess you could easily make an argument that he could. Like, he's got to be there. He's having one of the best seasons at the halfway point of anybody else. I mean, I think Roman Yost is an easy enough comparison in terms of defenseman. Maybe not offensively. You want to talk offense? You talk about my boy, Josh Morrissey, who's having a lights out season.
I think he's having a light out season, but you're still taking Erik Karlsson over Josh Morrissey. Like, you're still doing it.
Karlsson's like 400 years old. He 400? Could have a heart attack at any moment.
You're okay.
No, I just, I.
And we've crapped on him. We've crapped on him, and we've crapped on him a lot. I just feel like right now it's time to give him the respect, because it could not be easy playing in San Jose. It just can't. Like, so you long-term sign there. The team looks like they're going to be good forever. Everybody, you know, they ship out Joel Pavelski. Everything else starts to fall apart. You have Vlasic there, who's still making a killing. He's terrible. They have no goalie. They have no direction. They have one of the worst head coaches in the NHL, and you're putting up those numbers. I think it's time to give him the respect he deserves. He makes a ton of money, rightfully so. He's earning every dollar of that contract.
He's probably playing so well because playing in San Jose is very easy for him. This is the guy who spent many years on a terrible Ottawa franchise. Sure, they had a couple of runs, but many bad years there. And if I'm going to play on a bad hockey team, and my choices are through the winter in Ottawa or through the winter in San Jose, California, I think losing in San Jose, where you can then actually walk out of the arena and no one knows who you are, you just go about your everyday life, making billions of dollars with no pressure, no stress.
See, I don't know.
I don't want to take anything away from Erik Karlsson. I don't want to take anything away from
Karlsson. I don't know if Erik Karlsson's Johnny Gaudreau, where you just want to flee to Ohio. But like, I think winning matters to Erik Karlsson.
Like, he's not, because he's producing, you know. But, you know, I don't think it's Erik Karlsson couldn't do this with a talented running mate in Brent Burns. But now that Brent's gone, all of a sudden Erik Karlsson can shoulder the load. I'm just saying that he's not my top pick right now, honestly. I mean, I can't imagine. Yes, he's scoring more points. He's having one of the best seasons of his career. But right now, still, if I'm grabbing somebody for this year,
yeah,
I mean, I'm taking Cale Makar.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we're only halfway through the season, right? This isn't the season end. Cale still has, I'm not sure Cale still hit a ceiling.
If I had a choice, and I'm, you know, my franchise, I want either Cale Makar or Erik Karlsson, I'm going to take Cale Makar. I feel like 32 of 32 franchises are going to take Cale Makar. I'm saying this season alone.
Yeah,
this Erik season Karlsson alone, is having an incredible season. He's had an 82-point campaign before. He is playing even better on a worse team. I know you said Ottawa, they went to two Eastern Conference Finals.
Some of the Islanders.
Yeah, but that's...
Recently.
Yeah, the Islanders were good. I'm just saying, like...
They're good at defense. This is what I'm going to tell you. If we're doing a draft for this year only, based on this year's production, rest of the season.
Yeah.
And I've got the fifth pick, and four defensemen are taken before that, and Karlsson's left over, I'll grab Karlsson. My only choice. That's it. Yeah. Because I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just saying,
yeah,
this is a guy that, to me, that I don't know.
I feel like
he's not the best.
It's a Dougie Hamilton situation in Boston and in Calgary. They had other really good defensemen. He kind of was like, hidden a little bit, goes to New Jersey. He's the number one guy. In Carolina, number one guy. San Jose had too many alphas, and Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, they play similar game. They're very offensive defensemen, and it probably just clashed. And right now he's getting more ice. He's got a more probably stable defenseman playing as his partner, and you're starting to see those rewards. He's probably also playing at this level to get the hell out of San Jose.
No one's taking that contract.
Nobody, but San Jose is going to eat some of that money. Somebody's going to take that. If Dion Phaneuf's contract can get moved twice, Erik Karlsson, when he's producing like this, will be moved. Trade deadline. Lock it. He'll get moved before Jacob Chychrun.
If they can move that salary, if they can move that and eat salary, they'll have to call themselves the whale shark, because that's how much they're going to have to eat for that salary. Moving on. You've got other questions.
I got one more. Okay, so I saw this online about a player that should be in the Hall of Fame, or players that fans think they should be in the Hall of Fame. And I got three of them. Two of them are currently playing. I'm just going to read you their stats, and you're going to tell me which ones you think should be in. I know you've done this with me. It's completely unfair because you really don't know what type of player they are. You don't know who's
in
the lineup.
Luckily, I study all of the statistics the entire NHL before every call. Let's go.
Okay, so the first one is he's played over 1,000 games at 1,060. He has 437 goals. I was actually a little bit surprised by this because you would classify him more as a power forward sniper. He has 368 assists, 805 points. The next one is 1,057 games, 309 goals, 650 assists, and 959 points. A little playmaker, gritty playmaker, really sexy. Mm-hmm. And the last one, which I think I'll get into it later, 1,058 games, 264 goals, 747 assists, 1,011 points. Probably one of the best playmakers we've seen. Mm-hmm. Who are you taking? All three locks? Two locks?
Based off of those statistics, there's only one person, in my opinion, that has a chance in the Hall of Fame, and that's number three. Because unless you're doing something else above and beyond that, which maybe that's going to be the rug pull moment here. I mean, if one of those is a goaltender, then yeah, those are just amazing statistics for goal scoring. But I mean, yeah, unless you're doing something else, unless you're like one of the greatest leaders of all time, you've got multiple Stanley Cups. Yeah, maybe I'm an asshole. I feel like you got to have more than a point per game average on your career.
Yeah. Let me just up
or at
this
least
up a
around,
little bit more.
At least around.
The first one.
So number three. Number three.
Number three is the lock right now.
That's a white power symbol. Sorry, that was not what I meant. Number three.
White power symbol?
Something like that, yeah.
Isn't this the European way to say three?
I think you got to keep it locked. I mean, things get repurposed, and this is obviously the point of the podcast, but... okay. Yeah, that's okay. I was not doing that on purpose.
I didn't even know. That's how I do three. I can't do this. That's the same.
Canceled.
Okay. Yeah, canceled. The first one has a gold medal. Key line, key contributor in the gold medal Olympics. He's been to, I believe it's one Stanley Cup finals, lost. The second one also has a gold medal, not a key contributor, more of a depth guy, which is all the depth guys are superstars on team, whatever team won, not telling you. And he has also lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. So they've been there. They've been leaders on their teams to the Stanley Cup Finals. They both have gold medals. I believe they probably have a World Juniors too. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you're saying no to both of them.
Well, I mean, based off their points, definite no. Sounds like they're kind of losers.
Good.
So probably still a no. I don't know, were they really great in the community? Do they have any charitable actions that they should be aware of?
Okay, so I'll tell you. So you said yes to the one, the only, the Swedish Nicholas Backstrom as a lock for the Hall of Fame. He leads both these players with assists. He also has almost potted 300 goals. He's played with one of the best players in NHL history. And yeah, I'll say it. I think Nicholas Backstrom is a lock for the Hall of Fame. He's a Stanley Cup. The first one is Rick Nash. There's been getting a lot of buzz on the internet for Rick Nash making the Hall of Fame and I was a little bit flabbergasted, couldn't believe it. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player. He's an incredible player, one of the the older power forward sniper Jerome Iginla type players. He was great. He was a beast. Hated Columbus. Sorry, Columbus. And the second one was the Ottawa Senators, Claude Giroux. Now that you know their names, are you still no on both of them, or are you?
I'm still no on Nash. There were years where Rick Nash was in the conversation with most dominant player in the NHL.
Incredible.
There were a few years. I think Rick Nash's abilities were always more prominent in video games than they were in real hockey. You know, anybody that played the NHL through those years where he was getting those numbers knows how good he was to use in those video games. It was almost impossible to get him off the puck or to take the puck off of him.
Right.
That's not real life. And we don't award Hall of Fame based off that. I don't see it as a Hall of Fame career, which shouldn't take away from the fact that he had scored so many points, had a lot of longevity. But I mean, outside of longevity, which is impressive enough, nothing else really jumps out as noteworthy.
Right.
That, you know, 50, 60, 70 years from now, assuming there's still the NHL in its somewhat reasonable form, he's would he be somebody that I would look back on and be like, yeah, he was an all-time great? Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. Like, maybe Ring of Honor in Columbus. I mean, Lord knows they probably need to fill those rafters with someone.
Yeah. I think he's already there.
And notable. He? Yeah, I mean, probably. You know, I don't know where Rick grew up, but probably get an arena named after him at home. But
right.
NHL Hall of Fame? Hockey Hall of Fame? Nah. Claude's, I mean, I like Claude a little bit more than I like Rick Nash, so this one is a little bit tougher, but still, I don't know. I don't see that as being a Hall of Fame career necessarily. Yeah. Again, for a number of years in the conversation of, but never obvious choice for the best player in the game or prolific scorer in the game. And in the NHL, never really got it done. So that's obviously Stanley Cups are things that are outside of individual players. Complete control, but yeah.
As fans of the NHL, you always see this online too, and Twitter is the biggest thing for this, and I'm sure Reddit is as well, and other places, Instagram. I feel like you should be able to enjoy a really good player who had success in the NHL and doesn't mean they're a lock for the NHL. I mean, the Hall of Fame doesn't mean they're a lock for the Hall of Fame. I feel like every time there's a good player that retires, there's always the argument, are they Hall of Fame? Did they really do something incredible to put themselves in the Hall of Fame, or were they just really, really good, successful NHLers? And I feel like that's what Rick Nash and Claude Giroux is. When you look at Nicholas Backstrom's play and his career and his points per games, he's a lock. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's, you know, incredible amount of assists. He's a crazy good center, and he played with one of the best players ever. And it was one of the best duos 10 years ago, right? Even right now, they're still really good, but he's getting up there. But no, I feel like we should be able to enjoy Rick Nash and what he did in his career. Won the gold medal. He was playing with Jerome Iginla and Sidney Crosby in the Olympics. He was part of that roster, and it was awesome. But no, I neither of those two are Hall of Famers. Great players, loved them.
Yep.
Not Hall of Famers. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's the argument. It's like, no, they're not Hall of Famers. Doesn't mean they weren't kick-ass. They were both kick-ass. I love Claude Giroux. Loved Rick Nash. But no.
Yeah, and you have to take into account their impact on the game. And I think it's fair to say that outside of their, you know, fan bases, they didn't have that same large generational record-setting impact. Like, you need to be able to show that in some way, or you should be able to, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The Hall of Fame should be one of the loftiest in all sports. And it's also fair to say that a lot of Hall of Fames aren't treated much like that. You know, people can get in, or obvious people aren't allowed in, like a Pete Rose in the MLB, like ridiculousness. But yeah, it, like you said, it's there should be nothing wrong with having a long, successful, wonderful career, being well liked, and not making it into the Hall of Fame. Like, it's not the Hall of Likes. Sorry, no. It isn't. It needs to be notable, growing the game in different ways. And I mean, if Rick Nash had turned or been a part of Columbus rising to the top and having, like, let's say, perennial contenders while he was there and putting Columbus on the map, kind of thing, making them, helping them build a hockey powerhouse, then you might have something to say about that, where you could say, like, he was instrumental there in building hockey in that region. To this day, Columbus has a bit of a crap franchise. So I'm not going to put that blame on Rick Nash, but I'm also, there's no credit to go there, you know? I don't know. I think maybe, I don't think they're that far off. I don't, you know, if you throw a Stanley Cup on that resume on either of them, and maybe you have to look at them a little bit more carefully. But again, to be such prolific scorers in their prime, and at this point in their career to still be well under a point per game, to me, it almost speaks to that as well. That that's what the Hockey Hall of Fame is about. Like, either you're so good in when you played that your statistics are undeniable, or you had an impact on the game that will be remembered for generations. And neither of them hit that. Backstrom, I think you could say that he does hit that, because, you know, the argument could be made that maybe Ovi's numbers aren't what they are today if he didn't play with someone that was so, like, such a good passer, such a good vision on the ice, and so unselfish as a Backstrom. And I think it's also, you know, maybe it's a little unfair in some manner, but, you know, there's a lot of high-end talent per capita out of Canada. And to be one of the best players possibly to ever play from a country, maybe there's a longer list from Canada, so it's a tougher, but that's just one aspect of it. I think it's fair to say Backstrom's probably one of the best players from his country, at least of his generation. You can throw that in there as another thing. So, yeah, I don't think Backstrom's a lock, but I'd be okay with it. Nash and Giroux, I mean, I wouldn't be upset with them, but I'd.
Yeah, the argument's just better. The argument's better just for Nicholas Backstrom, just on his career, his play, his success, all that kind of stuff.
Yep. I mean, to extend it a little bit, just a little bit. Don't worry, gang. We're not going to keep here all day, all night. You know, at this rate, we'd be a Hall of Fame podcast because we've been so productive and so consistent.
Super consistent.
Obviously, we're not there yet. You know, we will be. We're a lock when it does happen. And by that, I mean the invention of a singular respected hockey podcast Hall of Fame. You know,
I'm with you. We should create it.
When we hang up the headsets. Well, I'm just thinking, by the time we hang up the headset, I'm sure that the Hockey Hall of Fame will have a category for people like us that helped grow the game.
Put me in there. I'm in there now. Storytelling's unparalleled to anybody else. I'm just saying.
With that, gang, let's call it a day. Again, shout out to all of the Twiglets and Midheads out there. Don't be shy. Please reach out to us on all of the socials. Find us wherever good podcasts are carried. Find us our gorgeous faces on YouTube and now on Spotify as well. Spotify video shout out. Look for and budget accordingly for the upcoming MFTs. That is the Mitts Freakin' Twigs investment opportunity. So MFTs, 2023 is the year of MFTs. Remember that, everybody. So again, put that money aside now, because you're gonna want to get on the ground floor. More of that hopefully to come as we continue living this sweet, sweet hashtag pod life, hashtag sweet life.
We're both in sweets, that's what he's saying. We're rich.
Yeah, we got to go to the hockey game and sit in the suites with the rich people.
Yeah, felt wicked. I'm sure you pulled it off, right? Everybody was like, holy shit, that guy's got money.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, I could see everyone in the lower bowls looking up to me with awe and respect. I didn't see them through the glass. I couldn't get too close. Got a little bit afraid of heights, and I didn't want to fall over. Yeah, it was impressive. It was impressive. It was a lovely experience. Happy to go anytime, Vancouver Canucks. Another famous outro in the books for Twigs, for Mitts. Thank you all so much. We love you. Take care and good night.